As we heard earlier, the Fabrica of St. Peter's, or the Fabrique as it's also known, is the Vatican office responsible for the maintenance and daily care of the Basilica and its facilities. Cristina Carlo Stella took over the management of the Fabrique back in 2004, and in this, the first of a four-part series, she tells us in more detail about what the Fabrique and its army of San Pietrini actually do.
The major task is to look after the basilica proper. However, it also encompasses the basilica's grounds. And that means that it is the perimeter of the basilica. Also, La Chiesa di Santo Stefano, which is that small little church that's located in the back of the apse of the Basilica of St. Peter. The Vatican Acropolis underneath, of course, which is a whole archaeological setting where the basilica actually rests. And then there's quite a number of interesting offices that is also under the supervision of the Fabrica. For example, the Mosaic Studio, the Vatican Mosaic Studio. The Vatican Mosaic Studio, for example, was founded because, as you know, in the 17th century, all of the paintings, the altarpieces that were painted within the basilica began to be transferred into mosaic technique. And so in order to keep up the maintenance and the restoration of these surfaces, they actually founded a specific mosaic studio. So mosaic studio is under the supervision of the Fabrica. Another major office, besides the office for the Vatican Acropolis, is, for example, the historical archive.
Probably the largest church in all of Christianity, St. Peter's Basilica covers an area of 2.3 hectares, that's almost 6 acres, and has a capacity for more than 60,000 people. When Pope Julius II died in 1513, the original architect Bramante was followed over the next 100 years or so by a succession of other architects, including Giuliano da Sangallo, Raphael, Antonio da Sangallo, Michelangelo, Giacomo della Porta, and Domenico Fontana, and finally Carlo Moderno, whose facade for the basilica might have made Michelangelo turn in his grave.
The thing that remains impressed, especially on art historians, is the fact that the facade is too big for the cupola, the dome of St. Peter's. So it gets eclipsed a little bit by the facade if you're standing too close to the basilica.
Exactly. So Michelangelo is really the chief architect of the basilica for quite a number of years, and he dies with that role.
Right.
He never sees the building of his great masterpiece of the cupola actually done. It was Giacomo della Porta. And right now we do have an Italian scholar who just recently has published a very interesting study on the contribution of Giacomo della Porta for actually the cupola, Michelangelo's cupola. Because again, we have some extraordinary treasures here at the Fabrique of St. Peter. One of them is a wooden model of the cupola, according to Michelangelo's design. This model was then restored and modified by the architects that came after Michelangelo. But these are some of the treasures that the Fabrique has.
You came here, what, about 2004? Were there any moments that really stand out for you as to a big surprise, something that really excited you, apart from getting into the archives and feeling the ink on the pages of Michelangelo?
My goodness, that is also a very, very, that is also a very difficult question. Every single day is an exciting day here, I have to say. I feel very, very honored to be working for such an important site for the universality of the Church, of the Catholic Church. This is a real clue point where you have faithful from all over the world, but not only faithful, I mean people from all over the world who come. It also involves a big challenge and a very big responsibility because, and I think this is why my job is particularly exciting, because you don't want people just to come and look at the Basilica as an artistic monument or as a church monument. You want to convey another message that accompanies that experience, that aesthetic experience, but you want them to understand that there is a real, real spiritual profoundness in this place. Of course, if you're faithful, you know, it's where St. Peter was martyred. So this is really the keystone of the Church of Christ is here, is right here. It's tangible. But we want every single person, and we are getting a lot of tourists from the Orient, for example, Chinese and others, who are not Christian, non-Christian people who are coming, and we want to convey that message. We want them to have a real spiritual experience here, whether they're faithful or not. And this is sort of the, let us say, the real task that I try to work out every single day that I'm here. There is something more. And I think this is a very important concept, which is also being taken up by quite a number of international organizations right now. As you know, for example, at UNESCO, you don't have just the World Heritage Convention, but you also right now have had a convention that is for immaterial heritage, and that's very important because for us these are steps that have been taken that really help our work. We have here actually one of the key places, not only for material heritage, church heritage, but also immaterial heritage. The two go side by side. If it wasn't for that fantastic spiritual devotional heritage, you wouldn't have St. Peter's Basilica.
How, for example, is this office trying to help bring this spirituality closer to people who are foreign to Christianity?
Well, we've done it in quite a number of ways. One of the things that I've noticed, and these are just small little practical things that I wanted to put immediately when I arrived. I noticed that crowds of people were entering the Basilica as if they were approaching either a museum or an artistic monument. A lot of them were just not conscious of what they're walking into and the importance of this site. So one of the things that I wanted to do immediately was to have a message in different languages as they were entering the atrium, the narthex of the basilica, where people would feel welcome, but at the same time, there was a message saying, you are walking into a spiritual place. I would want to expound on that, but unfortunately, the dimensions of the basilica are such that it's very difficult. But if I could, I would put a sacred music background within the basilica. I think that works very, very well. There are Romanesque basilicas, Romanesque monasteries or Cistercian abbey churches where you walk in and immediately if you hear a Gregorian chant, people behave differently. There's a real psychological preparation that sacred music can do for crowds walking into a religious environment. Unfortunately, the dimensions are such that we have tried it. We have tried it a couple years ago under Cardinal Marchisano, who used to be the Archpriest of the Basilica. We tried. We experimented on that. But the sound is just completely absorbed by Michelangelo's cupola, so it's very difficult to do that. But if I could, I would. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to do is the same thing down in the Vatican grottos, because again, you had school groups walking into this very special and sacred environment, because this is really the corridor that is leading you to the most sacred place of the site, which is the tomb of St. Peter. And you had school groups walking in, a lot of children walking in, you know, laughing, talking aloud, and they just were not conscious. And so we did the same thing, only that in the Vatican grottos, we don't have the problem of this great vaulting space, but it is more of a limited space. So we were able to put a sacred music background, and we have noticed a drastic change in the behavior of people. They would just go in and they would realize, oh, there's something here. And of course, the Vatican grottos are filled with tombs of saints, popes. Yeah, it's a very, very special place.
A very special place indeed. Well, thanks there to Cristina Carlostella, General Manager of the Fabrique of St. Peter's.